Hello and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockiel, and today my guest is Jared Greenberg. He's the host of 10 Before Tip on NBA TV, and you can catch him on Sirius NBA Radio on the Out of Bounds show with him and Brendan Haywood. We got into Anthony Davis's chances for the MVP, the playoff race in the Eastern and Western Conference. So, you ready to tip it off? Jared, how you doing?
Doing great, Mo. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Just enjoying that we got basketball back again. It was tough around this time last week.
Well, I was loving it, man. It was so weird to have the trade deadline before the All-Star break. It actually gave us an actual couple days off to relax after All-Star weekend.
Yeah, that's true. Although there were quite a few bombshells, which we won't get into last week, that I'm sure kept a lot of folks busy. But one thing I do want to get into is Anthony Davis has been on fire lately. Obviously, I'm sure you know, six games, you know, last night culminating in 53, 18, and five blocks. You know, the Pelicans have won six straight, which I think a lot of people kind of pegged them for, you know, possibly being out of the playoff race as soon as Cousins went down. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Harden kind of having the MVP almost sewed up, but do you think there's a chance Davis can kind of squeeze in and get in there?
Yeah, you know, I think that that Harden's, as long as he stays upright for the final 20 or so games, he's got this one locked up. But what I think is interesting is that the race behind Harden is really tight. And, you know, I think that there's at least, you know, 9 or 10 guys that have a legitimate case to be in the conversation. And what makes it tough is that Harden seems to be so far out in front. You know, not only does Harden have the incredible stat lines with all of the scoring combined with all of the assists, so you're getting the points accounted for, you're getting it with some good efficiency numbers, but you're also having Harden on the best team in basketball right now. And I think, you know, what adds to it for him is the fact that everybody looked at this Golden State Warriors team and was like, well, this might be one of the greatest rosters ever assembled. So the fact that you've got Houston right now ahead of Golden State in the standings, and obviously it's a fluid situation on a daily basis, you know, half game here, there, half game there. But the fact that the Warriors might finish second is what is giving Harden such a big leap. But I think absolutely the way Anthony Davis is playing, I wouldn't say he's yet a top five candidate right now, because I think some other guys have put up consistently better numbers throughout the year. But it's not to say Anthony Davis hasn't had a great run, hasn't had a great season. I think for him, what's high is, you know, is he going to make an All-NBA team?
Right. All-NBA is tough, man. It's hard. Yeah. We have a hard time figuring out All-Stars, and that's 24 spots. And now when you're going to cut it down to 15 spots.
And what's even tougher, what I want everybody to really, you know, think about with the All-NBA teams is that while some guys the league determines are flexible, that they play a couple of different positions. So like a guy like Anthony Davis can be on the ballot for forward or for center. But when you really think about it, you know, there's three teams of five, but really you got to look at it from, there's six total guard spots because there's two guards in each one, right? There's six total forward spots, and then there's three total center spots. So, you know, when you say, well, oh, why was this guy left off? It was, well, is he better than one of the six other guards that was picked? Because he may not be eligible for a forward spot. So a guy like Anthony Davis probably has a better shot because he can make it as a forward or a center. But when you look at the competition this year for those 15 spots, man, it's going to be insane.
Yeah, and that's such a great point you make about the All-NBA team that nobody really kind of talks about. You know, I personally wish they just said, hey, just give us your 15 best guys.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Who cares if it's all guards? You know, whatever. The guards just had a great year that that year, you know. And you're right. It's just such a tough thing to kind of figure out. And every time I try to do the All-NBA stuff, I'm just like, man, it gives me a headache. I have to take breaks. I can't
yeah,
function. And then you just end up leaving somebody off, and you're like, you kind of have to.
Right, and then what makes it more tough is that, you know, it's obviously like the MVP. It's just a regular season award, and you have to submit, you know, if you're a voter, you have to submit your awards before the start of the playoffs, but it doesn't get announced until after the playoffs, and you're sitting there all this time watching guys in the playoffs be like, oh, man, I was wrong. But yet the playoffs can't influence because your ballot's already submitted what your ballot looks like. But at the same time, you're like, man, like last year, you know, I was just watching John Wall in the playoffs be like, man, he probably should have been an All-NBA selection the way he played in the playoffs.
Right. And that's the hard thing. I mean, they do it with Russell Westbrook and the MVP last year, right? You know, that they lose against the Rockets and they're like, that's your MVP. I go like, yo, it's a regular season award. There's a different distinction to me between that. You know, we can do a whole set of awards for just playoff, you know, how guys perform in the playoffs. And he wouldn't have been the MVP. But, you know, when you just kind of say regular season, this is what it is. So I never really feel too bad when those guys ball out in the playoffs, because I sometimes feel like some guys save themselves for the playoffs. And it's like, all right, I'll let that be. And you may not have a great regular season, but if you go on to, you know, if you're LeBron and you coast through the regular season like he does from time to time, and he kills it in the playoffs, I'm like, yeah, you're still one of the best in the world, kind of thing. So the other thing with Davis's MVP rise, and you kind of touched on it a bit, is some of these other guys have been doing it all year. And, you know, this has been a great and amazing six-game stretch. You know, he's dropping 40 a couple nights. He's averaging 41 points, you know, in the six-game stretch. But it's not enough of a full sample size. Like, if he does this all the way to the end and he gets New Orleans, you know, home court advantage, then, yeah, he's going to be in the top five. But like you said, Harden's amazing right now.
Right. Well, what's even crazier about this is that, you know, just as close as the Pelicans are right now to getting home court advantage as one of the top four seeds, they're actually even closer to being out of the playoffs, right? So that's the remarkable part of all of this with all of these teams. You know, the East, I know we'll get to, is tight as well. But, you know, the West, you look at a team like New Orleans who has 26 losses, and that's what I look at this time of the year because everybody's played a different amount of games. I don't look at the games back. I just look at the losses because that's what you can control, is not losing, right, from here on out. And this Pelicans team has 26 losses. Well, the Clippers, who are outside of the playoffs, have 27 losses, right? So we're talking about a couple-day stretch, right? Not even a couple of games, but a couple of days of basketball action where everybody plays, and the Pelicans could go out of the top eight, right? So then how do we look at Anthony Davis? Because as you brought up Russell Westbrook last year, you know, as great and as historic as the numbers were for Russell Westbrook, if his team isn't in the playoffs, he probably, even with the same numbers, doesn't win MVP. Right. So that'll be pivotal to Anthony Davis in his case as to get into the mix.
Absolutely. And let's segue right to the West playoff race. Like when you mentioned, you know, looking at the loss column, really, you know, Minnesota's also at 26 losses and they're third. I mean, it's one loss separates third and ninth place in the Western Conference. You know, if you want to go a step further, you know, Utah's a little bit out of it with 30 losses. But I mean, that's an amazing run. You think about it this way. I mean, the Clippers could sneak in and get home court all of a sudden if they get hot at the right time. I mean, anything can happen in this stretch. And now with Jimmy Butler's injury, you know, we don't know what's going on in San Antonio. Kawhi might come back at the end of March, which is something that dropped yesterday. Like, this whole fluid thing, it's like you said, each night it's going to just change constantly.
Yeah, there's no question. And that's where tiebreakers become so big, you know, probably this year more than ever. And you know, people oftentimes want to devalue the 82-game regular season, saying it's too long or, you know, games are meaningless. Well, guess what? You know, based on how tight these races are right now, a loss you may have had in November may come back to bite you because it may be against a team that you lose a head-to-head matchup with that costs you, whether it's seeding or even being in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, I mean, Denver and the Clippers play tonight, and the Clippers, they're going to play three times this year. The Clippers won the first game. This is their second meeting tonight. The Clippers can sew up the series, you know, the series lead here because, you know, the next time they play is in April. So they only play three times. This is a huge game, almost bigger for the Nuggets because they can't lose this series because it's going to be a tiebreaker. And they're at eighth and the Clippers are at ninth right behind them. I love what you said about how important it is all season to beat those teams because it matters come playoff time. And that's the drum I kind of like to beat from time to time. This is why the regular season matters and why a game in November and December is important, you know, because it can implicate April. It means a lot for April.
Yeah, and when you go up and down the playoffs in the West, I mean, every team pretty much is going through some sort of injury issue or has had a major injury. And, you know, you obviously look at the Timberwolves with Jimmy Butler, the Spurs with Kawhi Leonard, the Pelicans with DeMarcus Cousins, the Blazers, I guess, relatively speaking, you're saying they're healthy. None of their big guys are out. You know, the Thunder, it's not necessarily a big guy, but they think, you know, Robertson is losing him is a huge loss. Meanwhile, the Nuggets, as you're talking about, they're getting a guy back. Like Paul Millsap's about to be reintroduced into this lineup. Now, how healthy he is, how effective he is, that's going to take time. But while everybody's wondering how much longer they're going to be without a guy, at least the Nuggets are getting a guy who may not be playing at an all-star level, but the reason why you bought Paul Millsap here was to be a complimentary piece. He didn't need to be your best player. He needed to fit in with the pieces you already had around Jokic, around Harris, around Murray. And I think that is what will propel Denver probably to threaten, you know, for one of those top four spots, you know, either third or fourth, depending on what Minnesota and San Antonio does here dealing with their injuries.
Right. And bringing in, you know, Millsap, it's kind of like getting a buyout candidate. You know, you haven't had him for a long time, and how quickly they work him into the flow is going to be really important and really kind of decide where they go. Because we've all seen it where you try to work a guy in and you just – the team kind of struggles because they're trying too hard to get the guy in the flow. And it'll be easier, like you said, with Millsap being more of a complimentary piece, whereas the Spurs will – you know, if they bring Kawhi in – like, that's a heavy hitter, and you got to figure out how that's going to impact LaMarcus Aldridge, who's been playing great this season, and so on. So that's a bigger piece you got to implement and figure out how to make work. Let's shift a little bit from the West and just kind of focus quickly on the East, because I was looking at it, and I mean, it almost looks like the top eight is sort of almost locked up in the East. Detroit's kind of faded a bit, you know, losing three of their last three games. Miami's, you know, hanging in there, but Philly's kind of push themselves a little bit ahead. You know, what do you think in the East? Is there anything interesting in the playoff race that you're seeing?
Well, I mean, the East, I mean, yeah, it's I mean, almost as wild as the West in terms of, you know, look at the Cavs, for instance. You know, not that anybody has any doubt that LeBron won't be able to, at the very least, reach the Eastern Conference Finals, that the path to getting there and then getting to an eight straight NBA Finals could be incredibly difficult by the fact that, you know, they're in the third spot, but again, you know, just the other day they were dealing with a situation where if they didn't win on a night, they would have dropped to fourth, and then they're facing a situation where the difference between fourth and eighth is minimal again, or more so fourth and seventh. But, you know, obviously as Miami has struggled and Detroit has struggled, that has made a little bit of a difference here in the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings. But, you know, a team like Cleveland, as they're trying to find themselves, you know, they're going to fluctuate. There's going to be some days where if they don't win tonight, you know, they could drop to fifth or sixth. And again, not that that means they can't get to the East Finals and certainly the NBA Finals, but it just means how much harder does a guy like LeBron have to work to reach that? And that's been such a big key for him as to why he's had so much success in the NBA Finals. Now, listen, not winning them, but his numbers he's put up in the last three NBA Finals have been ridiculous. And a big part of that has been because he has cruised through the Eastern Conference playoffs. I don't know that road is going to be as easy this year, even if they're the third seed, but really if they're the fourth or if they're not a home court advantage team, fifth or sixth, I mean, that'll be remarkably more difficult, not necessarily for LeBron, for him having to carry all these other guys who have never been in this situation before.
Yeah, and, you know, people are saying, like, LeBron doesn't need home court. I said he may not, but right. Larry Nance needs it. You know, Clarkson needs it. Like, these are guys that have never really been in it. You know, they've never been in it. You know, Hood's only had an experience last year. You know, George Hill's very experienced in that regards, but like there a lot of key players have never had that experience. So you kind of want to get at least home court for the first round, just for those guys to get them acclimated and get them figuring out that playoff basketball is so different. And that's another team that's going to be trying to bring back a guy, you know, how they work Kevin Love in, you know, when he comes back from the broken hand is going to be a challenge for them. And figuring out rotations and all of that. So it's tough to do on the fly and things like that, and hopefully they'll have enough games to figure it out. But, you know, with the other thing too is there are a couple of teams in the, you know, like I wouldn't want to play Milwaukee in the first round. I don't think I want to play Philly in the first round because they have guys that could potentially be the best player in a series, you know, in Embiid, in Giannis, that can really make things challenging. And like you said, they're the tougher East than the Cleveland's seen in years.
Yeah, no question. You know, I think it's funny when we hear this time of the year, oh, you know, this is a team teams don't want to face. I wish we'd talk about it the other way. Like, this is a team would love to face. You know, I mean, teams that are getting into the playoffs, listen, you know, they're young, they're feisty, but what we've learned through NBA history is not that there's not exceptions to this rule, but, you know, teams that have that their best player is a relatively young player still, you know, within the first 5 years in this league, they have a hard time winning series. So I would say yes, Milwaukee is certainly better. You know, Philadelphia poses a big threat because of what we see, some flashes from Embiid and Simmons. But ultimately, I still think these teams will have trouble beating any team that has a bunch of veteran experience just because the playoffs are so different. And while Milwaukee is, you know, I guess Giannis has been in two playoff series now. He's never won one. And getting to that next step is so difficult. It is just so hard for for teams that are led by young players.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing at the top, though, you know, like Toronto has a pretty young bench. You know, Boston's depending on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, two young players to continue to contribute. You know, Cleveland, we've already talked about question mark with those guys. Like, in that top three, we have guys that do have questions, and I'm curious to see how they perform come playoff time. And it kind of evens it out a little bit for me in terms of experience. But you're right. Like, none of those guys play the role that Giannis or Embiid play, and it'll be a new experience for them. And I'm with you. When I was with the Clippers, even with the Spurs, I never wanted to play Memphis in the playoffs just because I knew it's a wrestling match. It's not a basketball game. And even if we won the series, we actually lost the playoffs because we would be too tired to play the next team. What's your take on Washington? They've been playing, you know, quite well lately. You know, winners of 7 out of their last 10. You know, doing well without Wall. You know, you're seeing a lot more movement and things like that. What are you seeing from the Wizards?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's obviously been great, but you know, it's ridiculous to think that this team is better off without Wall. The only question is, these roles that guys have stepped into without Wall, are they able to translate that type of productivity once he comes back and gets back to dominating the ball? Because you don't want Wall to take a lesser role, maybe a slightly tweaked role, right? But the biggest issue with Washington is not Wall and Beal. It's do you have a consistent third option, and do you have somebody that's going to come off the bench that's going to give you a spark? And that's been, you know, consistently the problem the last couple of years, and it's continued right into this year when Wall was playing. And you know, guys like Satoransky and others who have played well, are they able to still be productive in a reduced role, and how do they find that once Wall comes back? I think it's a wildly fascinating challenge for Scott Brooks to kind of figure out.
Perfect. One last question, and I'll let you go. I know you got to get ready for 10 before tip. What team, either conference, Western Conference or Eastern Conference, what's one team in the playoffs that you're kind of keeping your eye on that not a lot of people are talking about, where you're like, they might be able to cause some problem?
You know, I mean, listen, I think that all that's relative. You know, I think Denver, you know, go back to them, you know. Again, though, you know, they're counting on young players who have never been there. Obviously, Paul Millsap will, if he's healthy and comes back, can be a big difference maker. But he's not going to be the best player on that team. It's going to be up to Jokic, Harris, and Murray primarily. But again, what does that mean? You know, danger. Do they win a game? Probably. Do they win a series? I don't know if they're ready to win a series, but I just think it's a huge step for that organization to get to the playoffs and experience that. You know, I think, you know, let's not, you know, ignore the obvious here. I think the pressure on the Raptors here is going to be interesting to watch, right? I think that they ultimately finish first where they are right now in the East, first time in franchise history that they're first. And for as much as people in Canada want to say that, you know, us Americans disrespect the Raptors, we're overlooking them, well, this is the great part about the NBA. It's that it's not a subjective ranking. You earned the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Now you've got a higher expectation, not just from your own fan base, but from the entire NBA fan base, right? So you can't finish first and then struggle in each and every playoff series that you play in and ultimately cost yourself where you should be and fall short, right? Like, if you finish first in the East, you've got to at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you've got to put yourself in a position. You know, I think one of the overlooked things with the Raptors is we want to talk about their history of struggling in the playoffs, and Lowry and DeRozan don't play as well once the playoffs begin. But the issue for them truly has been game one. They tend to lose game one in every single series, and that sets them so far back behind the eight ball, whether they have home court or not, that it truly makes them, as you said before, you know, it tires them down, because now you're automatically, you've got yourself a minimum of a 5-game series. And you look at the number of 7-game series that the Raptors have had to play over the last 4 years, and it is remarkable. Even when they lose, they seem to always play 7-game series. Remember, when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago, they took the Cavs to 6 games. Now, listen, the difference between 6 games and the Raptors winning is a huge leap. I mean, it is an Olympic-sized pool. But you still have to give them the credit that group had been there. Now, they're counting on a lot of young players to contribute this year, and DeRozan's got a bit of a different role, and I think it's phenomenal. I love what they've done. But the Raptors are going to finish first in the East. You can't go and lose in the first round. You can't go lose in the second round. You've got to at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
And the good thing for them is, if the seeding kind of stays the way it is, you know, Boston and Cleveland have to battle it out in the second round.
Right.
Like, you know, God knows what that series is going to look like hopefully we get it, to be honest, and see that kind of slug match. And it's, again, that one of those teams is going to come out of there, and their prize is, you know, hopefully the Raptors, if the Raptors can get past the first round and second round. I mean, that's the key, right? Like, the whole reason to get that top seed is hopefully an easier road to the playoff, to the finals. And right. you lose that advantage when you drop that game. The one team I'm kind of keeping my eye on, I'm not ready to give up on OKC. I know the numbers are terrible right now, and they're not playing good basketball. The Robertson injury was really deflating. But I think, you know, if they can just find a groove and get into a right rhythm, you know, and avoid Houston or Golden State in the first round, I think they can definitely get to the second round and put some pressure on either one of those teams, whoever they play in the second round. I just think they have too much veteran experience in that group. You know, Russ has been there. Melo's been there. Paul George has been there in their key guys. Adams is playing really well and can sustain that. So I think that's kind of the one team in the West I really want to keep an eye on. But if they finish and they have to play either Houston or Golden State in the first round, I don't know if they'll have that power.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that I've been harping on with the Thunder is that whether they win or lose, it doesn't come from a formula that seems to be building as the year goes on to figure out how they translate to success. And I don't mean to like make this all convoluted and everything, but the thing about the Warriors, and I'm not asking anybody to be the Warriors and even the Rockets, but the thing about the Thunder that still concerns me is that when they win games, they win it by Russ or Paul George kind of freelancing their way to a victory, and they hit some clutch shots because they're clutch players and they're usually better than their opponent. But the way you win a playoff series is by having an incredible game plan, being able to adjust between games, in possessions. And it seems to me like the Thunder have yet to figure out how to recognize their advantage and take advantage of it within each game. And I just don't know, I believe at this point, that's going to give them a huge problem in the playoffs, because teams have more time to prepare, they're better defensively, they're better coached, and they're more locked in. And if the Thunder are just going to take this freelance style where I think I'm better than you, well, that may win you a game or two, but it's not going to win you four games over a seven-game series.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. Jared, I'd like to leave it there. I think we covered a lot of topics pretty quickly, and I think we did a pretty good job. You know, tell everybody where they can find you and all that fun stuff.
I appreciate it, man. This has been fun. NBA TV each weeknight on 10 before tip. We're generally on at 6:30 Eastern, which is about 3:30 Pacific. So hopefully you can check us out on 10 before tip. We always set the table for the night in the NBA, discuss the biggest stories, and try and do it in a fast-paced, rapid-fire mode. And then each morning on SiriusXM NBA Radio with Brendan Haywood, former Dallas Maverick NBA champion. Him and I from 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on Sirius 207 XM86 NBA Radio. We got to go around the league and have some fun while doing it.
Awesome. Jared, thank you so much.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on.
That's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever else you go to listen to your podcast. Be sure to check out all our content on thejumpball.net, and have yourselves a great week.